This is the KVNF Regional Newscast. I'm Gavin Dahl. Coming up, part two of my interview with Democratic congressional candidate Diane Mitchbush. First, on October 15th, a formal complaint was filed against the Delta County Sheriff's Office for a potential violation of campaign finance law. KVNF News Director Jody Peterson has more.
According to the complaint, during summer and early fall, the Sheriff's Office used staff time and resources to promote the Back the Badge ballot measure, which seeks a tax increase to fund law enforcement. That's prohibited by state election laws. Here's Sheriff Mark Taylor describing the campaign finance law's specific requirements and why he thought his department's actions fell within that.
Basically, it says that after ballot language has been set, government entities can't provide any more assistance, you know, in moving the initiative along or a campaign along, that it has to go to a citizens group to move it forward. And so as soon as the ballot language was set, then we were going to hand everything off to the Back the Badge citizens group. And so in between that time, we ran out of yard signs, then we ordered some more. And so once the second order came in, we put that post out saying that you can come by and pick them up. As soon as I found out that it was potentially an issue, I took the appropriate steps to correct it immediately.
Taylor says he takes full responsibility for what he describes as a mistake.
I take complete ownership of this. That was a decision I made. You know, I would ask the Delta County citizens not to hold this mistake against the sheriff's office or any other law enforcement agency in the county. You know, the critical needs are real and due largely to the exploding increase in drug-related crimes in Delta County.
The Delta County Sheriff's Office is cooperating with the investigation by the Colorado Secretary of State's office and could face penalties and fees if found in violation. For KVNF, I'm Jody Peterson.
Diane Mitchbush is running for Congress in the 3rd District. A former college professor with a PhD in sociology, she has served as county commissioner and state representative. Should voters choose a veteran politician known for bipartisan compromise over a newcomer with a gun on her hip and no political experience? Here's part two of our interview. Why should an undecided independent who wants to send someone to Washington to solve problems choose you?
Because I have a record and a capacity for bringing people together and solving problems, for working across the aisle, for not listening to lobbyists or even to party leadership. I am independent in that sense. I'm a proud Democrat, but I work with Republicans. And if you look at my record in the State House, you'll know that 70% of my bills were co-primed. That's not just co-sponsored, but the Republican and I worked together. And most of those Republicans were rural Republicans, and we worked on issues ranging from funding education to making the permitting process for small hydro facilities more straightforward and less full of red tape, to dealing with transportation issues and many other things as well, including agriculture, which is one of the issues that I've worked on for many years.
Please give us one example of a policy goal of yours once you get to Washington to help create new jobs on the western slope of Colorado.
The best and quickest way to create new jobs is to invest in infrastructure. We need to invest in transportation, in broadband, in our electric grid, and in our water infrastructure. And I have a great deal of policy experience with infrastructure development, investment, and implementation. And I know that, for example, after the Great Recession, that's one of the ways that Colorado, particularly rural Colorado, was able to recover. Let's just take broadband as one example, although they all have great examples for our area. Broadband. There are many areas in CD3 that either don't have reliable broadband or have both up and down speeds that are way slow. And now, especially with COVID, we've seen the necessity for both telehealth and virtual education, which sounds great until you realize that some people can't access. The other, of course, set of issues is around our businesses. Businesses need reliable, high-speed broadband. And in many areas in our congressional district, they just don't have it. So it's very difficult for people to start a new business if they don't have that. And it's very hard to expand their business. So one of the things about investing is that first you have the construction jobs that go with laying fiber. then you have the multiplier effects in all our communities where local businesses of all kinds, including agriculture, can really benefit from that new 21st century infrastructure. Outdoor manufacturing is a key kind of business in our communities, and it's growing. Those are good jobs. But outdoor manufacturing, again, like Mayfly in Montrose, it definitely needs high-speed broadband, and many other people could probably start new businesses and create new jobs if we had infrastructure investment.
The United States directly subsidizes fossil fuel industries over $20 billion per year, with about 20% allocated to coal and 80% to natural gas and crude oil. Do you support this use of taxpayer money?
Not in those two cases, no. Both of those industries have been subsidized since, well, for over 100 years, since the 1890s. And the reason for the initial subsidies, as with any subsidy or incentive, is to incentivize new businesses, new kinds of approaches to production and industry. And these businesses, most of which now are multinational, of course, we have small producers too, they don't need it. And by the way, the $20 billion is a low estimate. If you take in all the side subsidies, including all the intricate tax policies, it's more like $600 billion. I think we should be subsidizing renewables, in particular solar, wind, and hydro, because with those kinds of subsidies, then, we can create new jobs, new businesses, and at the same time tackle climate change and help clean up our economy.
If elected to Congress, give one example of how you will work to protect the environment and combat the effects of carbon emissions to protect clean air and clean water.
There are two things I'd really like to do. First, a bill like the current House H.R. 763, which is a carbon fee and dividend bill, and I believe that will be introduced again. That is a policy that can immediately help clean up carbon emissions, lower carbon emissions. But the other piece is more broad, and it's in terms of renewables. When I was county commissioner, let me give you an example. We hired an energy service contracting firm. I pushed really hard for it because I knew it would save us money. And sure enough, they found all kinds of ways that we could improve our county buildings. And you know what? That creates jobs. It creates jobs for installers. It creates jobs for HVAC professionals. It creates markets for a wide variety of windows and insulation and solar panels. So I think that that kind of investment from the federal level will not only help us lower our greenhouse gas footprint, but it will also create new jobs and new businesses.
That was part two of my interview with congressional candidate Diane Mitchbush. Hear the entire unedited conversation, as well as Republican candidate Lauren Boebert answering nearly the exact same questions, at kvnf.org. That does it for the KVNF Regional Newscast. I'm Gavin Dahl. Thanks for listening.